gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. 'Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle, and welcome to Focus on the Facts. Today, my guest is Andrew Craig, an investigative reporter, author, attorney, and a fighter for public interest. His latest book is Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters, the first book out about the Obama administration's second term. We're going to talk about the controversy surrounding the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia and a meeting Andrew plans to attend next week at the National Press Club in Washington to examine the Texas investigative procedures following the death of Scalia. And reporters from the Washington Post will discuss their revelations in an article they wrote regarding the Elite Hunting Society, whose reunion the justice attended at a Texas ranch. Andrew recently wrote an article about the cover-up of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, and it has generated an excellent response from researchers, including the defense team for Sirhan Sirhan. I posted a copy of the article on my Facebook page. He now has joined a team of human rights and legal reform groups who are building on the evidence that a cover-up occurred both in the murder of President Kennedy and Robert. Those involved in the research include Andrew's Justice Integrity Project, a new group called Citizens Against Political Assassinations, and the Assassinations Archive and Research Center. I'll bring Andrew on now to tell us more about this group. You there, Andrew?
I'm here, and just delighted to return to the show, Evelyn. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you back. Tell us a little bit more about this this reform group that you got together. I suppose too, you need to talk about Robert F. Kennedy's that parole hearing that Sirhan got, where he was refused.
Yes,
refused
well,
parole again.
Let's. Maybe do it in the order of your question. The new group is called Citizens Against Political Assassinations. That's with an S, multiple assassinations. And it's an umbrella group, a nonpartisan group, led by many of the most famous names in research for the last 40 years. The chair, for example, was the noted medical school professor, Dr. Cyril Wecht, a consultant and a very brave consultant and whistleblower on the medical evidence in assassinations, including JFK, Robert Kennedy, and many others. The overall concept of it, Evelyn, is that there are still suppressed records about a lot of these things, and that's why probably our first big announcement will be later this week, although let's say the announcement is right here on your show. What better place to break it?
There you go.
That the spirit of Sunshine Week, which is next week, it's an annual event for about the last 15 years, sponsored by the major newspapers and other open government groups. We're announcing our presence and calling for release of remaining records on some of these big 1960s assassinations, which have a roadmap to current affairs. So that's
right.
That's the overview there, and I do emphasize that the focus in many ways is on current issues.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, you're a noted investigative reporter yourself, we can't understand easily what's going on last week or last month. So we need history. We need these kind of documentary records of the past to provide clues for the recent past and the future.
Great. Yeah, I was really interested in that article that you wrote about that parole hearing. That this poor guy has been rotting in prison for how long now?
Well, it's fascinating, and you're, of course, talking about last month's parole hearing for Sirhan Sirhan, the
right.
accused and convicted assassin of Robert Kennedy on the night that seemed to launch Robert Kennedy on a fairly clear-cut path toward the U.S. presidency in 1968.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
It was June 5th, and he had just won the California primary, and there was an open presidency after the resignation of Lyndon Johnson. And suddenly, the world was shocked just shortly after the assassination of Reverend Martin Luther King
right.
to find that this Sirhan Sirhan had been arrested and wrestled to the ground. He was promptly convicted less than a year later and sentenced to the gas chamber, even though the medical examiner issued a 62-page report suggesting that the shots had come from behind, not that killed Kennedy. And the parole hearing, just briefly, before we get into a discussion, was last month before California authorities, who heard a close friend of Robert Kennedy, who was shot in the head by Sirhan, beg for his release and argue that the evidence, including the medical examiner's report, showed that Sirhan could not have done it. And
right.
the parole group quickly rejected that, and Sirhan is back in prison. So I wrote this up on the Justice Integrity website, Justice Integrity Project website. Several other writers wrote it up, but there's relatively little publicity because most people just assume that the man couldn't have been held in virtually solitary confinement for 45 years if he didn't do it. And yet, a lot of people have looked at it, including Robert Kennedy's friend Paul Schrade, who was wounded, say he couldn't have done it.
Right. So he's been kept in solitary confinement?
Pretty much. You know, I think the rules are that you get out for maybe an hour a day to walk around, but what we see in some of these cases is just incredible political reprisal against people, which is bad enough if it's somebody who's actually clearly done the things. Sirhan, for example, was supposed to be released under normal guidelines in the early 1980s, but he's
really?
Been kept there. He's originally sentenced to death, but all death penalty cases were voided through various reasons beyond his case. So he should have been out a long time ago. And yet, here he is, kept in these horrible conditions and probably innocent of anything more than being a patsy and probably operating under mind control to do the initial shooting of people like this Paul Schrade. By the way, my article has a appendix of the major books on this topic, and a dozen books, both of defenders of Sirhan's basic innocence, but also the major books that and necessarily documentation that suggests his guilt. So what I'm trying to do through this kind of research is focus on little-known stories, but also give readers enough information to reach their own decisions, even if it's contrary.
What do you think? How does he feel, do you think, Sirhan Sirhan?
Well, he realizes right now that it's very unjust. I mean, he's had his whole life destroyed. But he, as best as I can understand it, and of course his access to the media is very limited, but word has seeped out on occasion that that he can't remember what happened.
Right.
And he's had a lot of time to think about it. And they, some of the books on this, the ones I currently put the most faith in, create a pretty powerful set of circumstances together to suggest that after he had an accident and disappeared from his family home, he probably fell into a group of people who subjected him to hypnosis, and that led to this situation. So he has undoubtedly read that kind of literature by now. Two books on this, one is called Hit List and another is Dead Wrong, take a look at a lot of deaths and mysterious deaths, and so they each have chapters on this that provide a succinct overview. So he's probably had a chance to focus on this, but he just can't remember. But of course, that's,
right, that's, and that's what he always maintained, isn't it? From day one.
Yeah, right from the beginning. And by the way, there's I reference in my article, which is on Op-Ed News, where about 2 weeks ago, and that's of course where I first got to know your work, Evie.
Oh,
your great work in 2008 on Senator Barack Obama and his past in Chicago, but. There's a new book coming out that is going to answer a lot of questions. It'll be in about 3 months, and it's by a reporter who was very close to the scene there, and he has retraced the mysterious woman in the polka dot dress, and who many people think was a trigger for Sirhan. She was allegedly spotted running away from a scene saying, "We killed Kennedy." And the reporter who's coming out with this book says he compiled the evidence and gave it to authorities in 1968, and they simply weren't interested.
And who do you think is controlling this?
Well, I've tried to go into this in the JFK assassination. In fact, almost everything that I do with the background of being a mainstream reporter, which is how I got my start, and have a kind of neutral outlook. But I'm now at the advanced age and so forth that I am an opinion columnist, so I'll answer your question this way. I think it's heavily related to those forces. I'll call them the puppet masters, in the spirit of my book. Others have different names for the power elite, but it's the puppet masters did not want Robert Kennedy to be president. Particularly since, remember, we were in the Vietnam War. He was an anti-war candidate. He had more privately wanted to investigate his older brother's death, President Kennedy. And he was in a position to cause some major disruptions if he was the president, just as Martin Luther King was. And in fact, just like his brother John Kennedy was. So we have these trio of assassinations, and anybody who says what I just said has been denounced for 40 years as a so-called conspiracy theorist. But if you look at them, either one by one or separately, you know, one has to almost defy the critics to try to go toe-to-toe, which they don't really want to do because there's just too much evidence suggesting dark secrets.
Yeah, very dark, very dark. You know, and I was in my teens when that happened in the 60s. That was very traumatic to live through that, to see that happening. You know,
well,
killing our leaders like
of
that.
Course, it was right after not simply Martin Luther King's death, but that created major riots that burned the core of many cities. I was just getting started in my news career. I was a college student who had credentials to cover the 1968 convention. So I was there with the Democrats when, after Robert Kennedy's death, there was literally chaos and riots as anti-war protesters and others trying to pick up the pieces and advocate for the president of their choice clashed with Chicago police.
Oh, absolutely. What year was that?
Well, it was 1968, and so Robert Kennedy was killed June 5th. The convention was in the next month in July. Probably his brother Ted, in my view, and some other historians, could have probably been nominated if he had wanted it. There were still remnants of the Democratic machine. I think he was not simply grieving and otherwise disorganized, but probably scared, the more I read about this, because, of course, he had gone through some very difficult times. He had had other members of the family killed. So he just wasn't ready for it. So that resulted in the battle between McCarthy and Humphrey and the Nixon election.
Right, right. I know I was living in Chicago then, and I remember the riots and things, but then when were those shootings at Kent State when them kids got shot?
That was in 1970, as I recall.
1970, so okay. I was living in
Chicago
then.
2 years later.
Yeah, and I was thinking of going out, you know, protesting and things. That scared me to death when they killed those students.
Well, you also
know,
had
I didn't
at
go.
The time the growth and the descent of the anti-war, parts of the anti-war movement were captured by the high visibility weather underground terrorists who basically destroyed much of the credibility of the anti-war movement by their violent advocacy for bombing and so forth. So you had the three mainstream leaders, Martin Luther King and the Kennedys, dead. You had these radicals and then the hippies and the drug culture antagonizing middle America just when there was the possibility of students, black and other civil rights advocates and unions all coming together.
Right.
And that was destroyed. And so we ended up having almost 30 years of very conservative reaction against that kind of disruption and...
And the powerful elite created that, didn't they?
I'm increasingly thinking, and this leads to, in a sense, through your work, where you, in 2008, were taking a very close look. You're probably too modest to tell your listeners, but I'll do it. You were really among the pioneers in taking a look at this Senator Barack Obama and identifying the many ways that he was a product of the machine in Chicago in an extremely unlikely way to be a reformer, which is, of course, how he was packaged to the public to defeat Hillary Clinton, and then ran a very centrist, at best, Democratic presidency for two terms.
Right, right. Yeah,
I'm being kind when I say centrist.
The Chicago gang, and I found him. You know, he was involved in the war profiteering all the way back then when he was in Chicago. That, you know, when I seen him going to the White House, and when I started writing those, I didn't know him at all, and that's what I went to do, research him. Was all because I thought I was a Democrat, and I thought I'd be writing articles supporting him if he won that Super Tuesday over Hillary. And when that might happen, and I heard it on the news, I thought, well, I better go investigate him because I don't even know him. I don't understand this. But it wasn't 2 days, and I knew that he was just a bought and paid for nobody that never did nothing in his life, you know, to qualify him to be president of the United States. And it was like, what is going on here?
You know, well, I shouldn't do this because I'm, you know, benefiting from being on your show, but, you know, he had, for the sake of discussion, he had been president of the Harvard Law Review, which is not that easy. And part of the reason I mention that is, even with that, as you point out, he had to do a lot of other things that do not withstand examination, as you exposed. But he had gifts and he had achieved some stature. But as we look at, let's say, Marco Rubio now, to bring things up to date, here the establishment has been trying, or at least big parts of them in the Republican establishment, has been trying to foist Marco Rubio on the public as kind of the next Obama of a Republican stripe. And here's a guy, not to be a snob or anything, who flunked out of community college, who's another first-term senator who hasn't done anything, really. And Obama makes him look like, what should we say here? He makes Obama look like Abraham Lincoln, I think. at any rate, the public seems to be getting wise, and Rubio is sinking like a stone.
Well, you know, it's such a charade. I don't even watch these anymore. I mean, they put out this circus for 2 years before every presidential election. Now, throw, you know, umpteen candidates out there, and all the media, that's all they talk about constantly, constantly. And I don't watch mainstream media at all. I have not listened to one speech by one of those candidates. They're all just clowns. You know, they're not worthy to be running for anything, let alone president of this country. But it's just a big charade. You know, they're all bought and paid for whores from the corporations. And, you know, I don't watch any of it. None of it.
Well, I think you're on the right path. But I do watch.
You do, because you report
all of it.
I'd have to look at
partly. I mean, you know, that somebody's got to do it. It'd be like, you know, if we, you know, somebody's got to do it. So I do a lot of it. I read both the mainstream, watch a lot of it. Much of the time I'm watching Fox News now because but I'm also deeply involved with the alternative media, including your guest from last week, Wayne Manson, who really helped enlighten me about President Obama in 2009, because I was just going with the flow like most people. I'm physically in Washington. My office of the Justice Integrity Project is on Pennsylvania Avenue, halfway between the White House and Congress. And I had just watched the inaugural parade, really from my building, and got a scoop in January of 2009 when I saw Obama get out of, and his wife get out of his limo right in front of my office building here. And somebody I was with told me that he had written to Obama headquarters and suggested that it would be a great thing to get out right in front of the National Archives and the Navy Memorial. And I had that scoop, and it was front page on the Huffington Post for about 2 days. And and they gave me a password, and I did a lot of front page writing about scoops. But my friend Wayne Madsen, your guest last week, and this in my book, as you know, but he said, don't get too carried away with this guy. He said, I'm going to take you to the National Archives and teach you how to look up declassified CIA documents. And right. Wayne is, you know, 14 years Navy Intelligence, National Security Agency. And you know what he showed me. That a declassified document, actually it's a New York Times article, that did not connect the dots, but it was right there, that Obama's first employment after college was with a CIA front company, Business International. And of course, if you were working at the CIA front company before you become a community organizer, that's a little different than if you're just out there helping the progressives.
Right, right.
And so that was one clue for me. And there were many, many others that I came across that constitute both the book Presidential Puppetry, but the kind of ongoing researches that we're talking about here, including into these assassinations, including to this current group of puppets, like, well, all of them, pretty much. Yeah. Although I think somebody like Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, they're aspiring to be puppet masters.
Absolutely.
But they're not there yet. I mean, to be a true puppet master, you have to have billions of dollars, but they're hoping to get there.
Well, yeah, they're, and, you know, I was kind of embarrassed because I have to tell people every now and again, I was a Democrat, you know, before I discovered Obama, and now I'm nothing. I hate it when they keep on giving names to all of us, you know, that we're something or another, and that's why we vote for this person or that person, because I am nothing. Okay, and I swore out of any.
Oh, you're big in my book.
Yeah, it's but before that, I wrote a two-part article on Obama and Hillary, and it was all good. I didn't really know him that well, but I put the point that I thought that Hillary was more qualified, being that she'd had the experience of coming out of the White House after the last Bush, you know, and putting the country back together. But back in the '90s, I didn't really investigate the Clinton administration at all. I mean, you know, I didn't know really what they were up to. I do now, and it's horrible. But, you know, I was thinking of the economy and things like this, you know, how to improve it and things like this. And so I wrote an article, and I said, in all fairness to him, that I don't really know him that well, but I just think she's more qualified early on in their campaign. You know, well, then after I did that investigation, it was like, oh, my God, what have we got here?
Well, maybe not immediately, and I'll just follow your lead on what topics you have, but I hope before our hour is up, we'll have time for, I've got a few thoughts of hope and humor that I hope to share in this, because, you know, really there are many after we reach the kind of realization that you have, which I think is quite accurate, we can find occasions for hope and humor.
Well, at night, I'll tell you, I confess, I need to get out of this after all day, you know, doing research and things, that I put on funny shows. Like tonight I got scheduled George Carlin shows that make me laugh hysterically, okay? That I need to laugh before it's time to go to sleep, you know? I mean, for months there, I discovered the Illuminati, figured them out and everything. I couldn't even sleep.
We
I
need
had nightmares. Yeah, and I need to laugh in the evening, and I do.
Well, I think we need to do that, and I've become a kind of amateur collector of humor, both clean and guaranteed funny jokes, but also of sketch humor. Like I do a lot of watching of the old Jack Benny shows. He's a Chicago Waukegan native, and this stuff on YouTube is just hilarious, and it's not so much jokes, as you may recall, but it's just situations that he gets into, and it's we need that in our life as we look at this stuff.
Well, sure, but the thing is about now, you can't watch TV because it's just full of satanic films. I can't watch any. In fact, I unhooked my cable completely and told them to get that satanic filth off of my
I mean, part of it is, I think these, particularly the local newscasts where they have all this murder and stuff, you know, we could be totally focused on that and fearful and angry and scared to go out, and yet we got to go out. We got to live, you know. So, It really is oppressive, but we've got to find the key to look at these clowns. That's why I'm working on an update of presidential puppetry, and it'll be called Presidential Puppetry 2016. The candidate charade continues, and there'll be a lot of dirt about these current crop, but. Since nobody really cares about hardly any of them, I've got to wait till we get closer to thinning the herd before coming out with the book, because it is an interesting and I think humorous and frightening story, but we've got to get the bit players off the stage first.
Well, you know, I do see different times of people saying, you know, who they're going to vote for if Hillary becomes the nominee and things like this. But, you know, when Dred was still in the race, I just could not believe it that this country would allow a convicted war criminal's brother to run for president, and then Hillary, with her background and everything that's happened. You know.
Well, here's the thing: to be a little charitable to the public. And I've given a lot of thought to this because I've just been reading some great books. And I realize that we're all learning, you know. So even somebody like me, you know, I was in Washington, experienced journalist, and ran an organization, attorney. And I didn't know lots of this stuff. And I'm still finding out new stuff. So imagine what it's like if for people who have nothing to do with the media or public life and, you know, are trying to keep up with TV and the news. And I think in some ways we who are finding out deeper layers have to remember what it was like just a few years ago and realize how would people possibly know? I mean...
They wouldn't. And you know, and after I discovered the Illuminati and researched all that and seen how all our top officials are involved and everything, it was like, I didn't know this. And I didn't realize the mind control.
No, well, exactly. I think all of this. I may have mentioned this last time I was on a couple of weeks ago, but it's such a great book title and so relevant, I'll mention it again. But a media critic, Danny Schechter, wrote a book, The More You Watch, The Less You Know, because they're leaving out, in many cases, the key fact that makes it understandable. So once you know, I mean, just take an example, once you know that President Obama and his whole family on both sides have a intelligence background.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. See, I didn't go that far. I didn't find all that out. But, yeah, what's come out since. Yeah, tell
no,
us a little
building,
bit about
we're that. Building on it. And that the intelligence, just to be clear to your readers who haven't, or listeners who haven't had a chance to think about it, in many ways, they're the enforcement apparatus for Wall Street or, you know, the Midwestern equivalents, like the Pritzker family or whatever.
Right.
And the foundations are a huge part of this. Now, I'm reading now a book I can really recommend. It's called Jeb and the Bush Crime Family by two people I know, Roger Stone and E. Howard Hunt's son, Noah St. John Hunt. And it is just a remarkable takedown of 100 years of the Bush crime family. And it's okay. Very, very well done by people who know this stuff and who have lived it. And I'm, even though they cite my book in their bibliography, I'm learning new parts of anecdotes that that I reported on. But of course, it's all a progression because I was building on writers sometimes from 30 or 40 years ago or more recently. And if we have time to read these books, we're going to find out so much about these people. And of course, part of the problem is nobody's going to believe it unless they've done at least a little thinking about it.
Right, right. And the way the media is now, you know, the way that it distorts everything and outright lies and everything, people don't hear about these things. If they aren't online and don't go researching and stuff, they don't hear about any of this.
Well, they don't, and maybe I think it's helpful to realize that we've got to work with the mainstream media and that 99% of them are just trying to do their job, just like 99% of the people in the CIA or even on Wall Street are doing their job as they understand it. I think it helps to have, I don't know if it's 99 or 98, but, you know, it's helpful to start with that kind of view that, you know, most people don't wake up in the morning thinking, how can I distort the truth? They're just trying to get a story. But the system is such that the kind of things you and I are talking about here, people just shy away from. And it's not even conscious. It's, well, my editor probably wouldn't like that, you know?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the research I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 months, I could never agree that 99% of them don't know what they're doing. I mean, I have videos that I have gotten that shows them outright lying, making up stories completely, staging events in the studio that never happened, like they're overseas watching bombs in this country and that kind of things that are so rotten to be putting out there to the public that they know what they're doing.
Okay,
and
I will sight unseen agree with you.
Government.
I think I'm saying 99% of the people, and that includes people who are covering the retirement story of the local mayor, you know, not
oh,
the one
involved
in deep intrigue on these sensitive topics. But for example, I would go to the other extreme and agree with you that virtually 100% of the national correspondents covering the Pentagon, let's say, know that they cannot report serious discrepancies or they'll lose their access
and job. And if you were a person, could you work like that? I couldn't. I don't care what they paid me. I could not be a liar like that. I could not.
Well, what happens is that they, by a process of attrition, anybody who has objections is phased out. So they don't have, so they're getting people who like doing that.
Right. A lot of them are involved with the CIA and stuff too. So, you know, they're right in there with them.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And by the way, I've got a list. Wayne got me, but it's actually available on the internet of something like 1,700 members of the Council on Foreign Relations who care about its intelligence committees. Now, that doesn't mean that they're, quote, in intelligence themselves, but it's close. And I can tell you that every major news organization, every major book publisher, every major broadcast network is there among these 1,700 people, just like the CIA's program, Operation Mockingbird, to influence the media in the 60s
and 50s. People listening to my show, some of them won't even know about that. Tell a little bit about that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Operation Mockingbird, anybody can look it up on Wikipedia. By the way, Wikipedia was, it was begun with an investment by the CIA's investment program, Inkatel. And, you know, most of it is just normal stuff. You want to read about dinosaurs, you look it up. I use it all the time. But I also know that on sensitive topics, anything like 9/11 or other assassinations, and particularly your last guest last week, Wayne Madsen, it's rigged. They're going to make Wayne, and I've written three columns on this. They want to make him look horrible, and there's nothing that anybody can do, because they have people there that control anonymous editors, and anybody that puts in anything that makes him look like a normal journalist, much less a reputable one, it's deleted. But anyway, Operation Mockingbird, you can look it up on Wikipedia. So this was a program created in the 1950s and carried over at least to the 60s, whereby the 40 leading news organizations in the United States would have an informal network, so that if the CIA thought that something was awkward, or they'd listen to the CIA version. And that includes especially something like the Kennedy assassinations. And it's important to understand that this was not the CIA ordering NBC, CBS, The Washington Post, New York Times to do something. Because once you understand, which I don't think Wikipedia brings out, but I will, once you understand the puppet master theory, you realize that the people who run CBS or the Washington Post are the puppet masters, and that the CIA kind of works for them.
Okay.
You see? Because they're both working, in effect, for Wall Street, because Wall Street funds the people who want to buy or run CBS. They need the Wall Street money. But so, for example, Operation Mockingbird's, in effect, leaders were two people. One, Philip Graham, the publisher of the Washington Post, and his close friend Frank Wisner from the CIA, who was by background, like most of them, kind of a Wall Street lawyer and slash spy. And you could look it up in Catherine Graham's memoirs, as well as some more specific books, that Philip Graham and Frank Wisner met for dinner about once a week. So, okay. and these are the two leaders of Operation Mockingbird.
Right.
So, now, you know, they probably enjoyed each other's company, so this is all very circular. It's not like they're probably meeting and passing memos back and forth. In fact, they had their wives involved. But it's just the way things were done. And if people wonder, why don't we know more about the JFK assassination? You got to be thinking, well, who would write it if not simply the Washington Post, New York Times, NBC, and CBS were involved, but to give one more example, and I don't mean to filibuster you here, Evelyn, but one more great example that I didn't know anything about until I started doing this research, is that the publisher of the two most important magazines in the United States, same as Charles Douglas Jackson, and he was publisher of both Time and Life magazine in 1963. But that at that time, he was considered the number one expert in America on psychological warfare.
Well, here we go, yeah.
Let me let that sink in, because he had gone back and forth between Time Life and the OSS, which is the World War II Office of Strategic Services that was the forerunner of the CIA. He'd gone back and forth between the magazine world and psychological warfare, and he was worked for President Eisenhower in the White House during the Eisenhower administration as an expert on national security and psychological warfare. And here he is, not simply running the magazines, but acquiring the exclusive rights to the Zapruder film, which shows the assassination, and to Marina Oswald's memoirs.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And
wow.
If that's not interesting enough, here's the kicker. Time Life never published that stuff.
No.
So you think... Yeah, you know, by the way, when I went to the University of Chicago Law School, I did a year study project on the concept of the marketplace of ideas.
Okay.
And you and your listeners probably know what that is, but just as a quick reminder, it's the concept that we get what we want and we're willing to pay for. So if we want conservative news, we listen to conservative TV stations and magazines, and et cetera, et cetera. And that is very comforting to the public, because it would make it seem like it's very democratic. But when you think about it, and I'm going to get back to this Time Life JFK assassination in a second, but when you think about it, who's really the customer, and what are they paying for? And having been in the high-tech communications industry here in Washington for 15 years, I ran a high-tech association, I can tell your listeners that they pay nothing on their cable bill for network news. Nothing.
Right.
And so if you're paying nothing, what's their loyalty to you? Well, maybe it's a little something, but it's not much. And so all of it, the TV networks are entirely supported by advertising. So the real customer is the advertiser. But
right.
If you take it a step further, as I've done, Evie, it's not even necessarily the advertisers, because Macy's doesn't care that much about some of this deep intrigue. You know, they just want to sell things. But the puppet masters who are making the loans to the people who buy the Chicago Tribune or funding NBC and so forth, they care a lot about certain things, like the JFK assassination, who really did it, and it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald. And so when Time Life bought exclusive rights to the Zapruder film and just showed a few scenes, stills, but not the movie, and they never published the memoirs of the widow, they were suppressing that information, not selling it to their readers.
Right.
Because that, to use the phrase of the old TV show, that information was worth more dead than alive.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You must have an opinion. Are you willing to say who you think killed JFK?
Yes.
You are.
But I will also preface that by saying I don't think it matters that much.
And not really.
I've published a 30-part reader's guide to the JFK assassination at justice-integrity.org that anybody could look up. It lists all the main books and many interpretive articles, 30 of them so far. But to answer your question, there's at least 8 suspects, several of whom have pretty clearly identified themselves as being involved with the killing. There's some people who have falsely confessed. For example, there's a convicted murderer named Chauncey Holt who wrote a book saying he did it. But most people think that was just disinformation. See, there's all kinds of people falsely claiming innocence or even guilt. The reason it doesn't matter, and I might have to leave the phone to get my list from one of the 100 books I wrote in the margins here, but the reason it doesn't matter is I think it was professional killers.
Okay.
And who were themselves snuffed out shortly afterwards. And they're very replaceable individuals. For example, one was highly likely to have been a great sharpshooter from Marseille in France, and he died a couple of years afterwards. He went on the lam. He was tracked down and killed. So for any of the listeners thinking of getting into this is a dark joke, but anybody thinking of getting into this line of work, it's a short life expectancy.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
So Oswald, for example, was pretty clearly himself a double agent who was a patsy. You know, they were telling him to do all kinds of suspicious things, partly because he wanted to do it because he wanted to be a spy. But if you're told to do things like hand out pro-Castro literature and to sailors in New Orleans, or defect to Russia, and you're doing it under orders, that makes it very easy for him to be the scapegoat.
Sure. Well,
and then they bring in the professional trigger people, probably at least 3 of them, and they take out the president, and then they disappear. Oswald's arrested, and the triggermen, they disappear, and it's a done deal. And then Ruby kills Oswald, and then Ruby dies.
Right.
And
right.
You've got a very neat package.
See, that's what I was saying before. As a teen, this stuff was so scary to me.
Well, it should be. And by the way, in my view, it scared people like the Kennedy family. So
well, sure.
If it's going to scare them, it should really, you know, they're supposed to be so powerful. It's certainly going to, should. The point is to scare people like us.
Yeah. difficult to a teenager. It sure did. I mean, watching this stuff live on TV, it's like, what in the world?
Well, once people start down the path of looking into this, that and by the way, at the beginning of the show, we mentioned this new group, Citizens Against Political Assassination, led by a very noted and capable coroner, medical doctor, Dr. Cyril Wecht. But once you realize Kennedy was killed from the front, Oswald was at the rear,
right.
Robert Kennedy was killed from the back, and Sirhan was in the front, in a somewhat more complicated situation with Martin Luther King. But once you start looking at that, you realize that the mainstream news media cannot get into this because a detailed description of it would raise not simply questions about the 1960s, but what about now?
Right. We only got a few minutes, but like now that Supreme Court Justice Scalia dies and nothing is done about it. You know, no investigation whatsoever or anything. This is the point we've come to?
Well, I mean, that's why I took the lead in organizing this event, which is actually at the National Press Club on this coming Wednesday. It's open to the public. It's a fairly small room, but let me tell you a little bit about it and why I organized it. Our friend Wayne Madsen went down to the ranch, and I think he talked on your show about this last week, but to summarize, here's this Justice of the Supreme Court. He goes to this luxury ranch in the middle of nowhere in West Texas near the border. He dies. There's no autopsy. They do an autopsy by phone, and nobody knows who's there with him except the ranch owner, who's a billionaire, who had a case before the Supreme Court. And so, to fast forward, we're wrapping up here, but I see a story in the Washington Post where a retired deputy chief of police here in the District of Columbia said this is highly irregular procedures. And they made it a front page story. And what caught my attention, Evelyn, is they said conspiracy theorists abound or something like that. And I'm thinking, wait a second, the guy used to be head of the homicide division. He's deputy police chief.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on, and come back again soon. Sorry that time's so short. Thank you so much, Andrew. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Hope to see you next week. Bye.